Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our host will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our host will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, continuing our coverage of all things Star Wars animation. And we are here to talk about Season 4, Episode 16 of The Clone Wars, Friends and Enemies. And joining me tonight are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Jonathan.
Hello, everyone.
And Master Collect-em-all, Barrett.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett.
All right. And as mentioned, we are going to be discussing Friends and Enemies, Part 2 of our Obi-Wan in Disguise arc. And we're going to pick right up where we left off last week. But before we do, let's go around, as is our way, and get everyone's thoughts on this episode. And let's be crazy. We're going to go reverse order now, and we'll actually let Barrett kick us off. Barrett, what did you think of Friends and Enemies?
I thought this episode was very, very well put together. It continued the story along. It didn't give too many hints about where it was going to go. And all in all, I thought it was a very good episode.
All right. Jonathan?
You know, I really enjoyed this episode, too. You know, typically, this would be the kind of episode that I wouldn't like as much, because it, you know, like Brent said, it didn't move at all. It didn't do a lot. You know, they basically spent most of it on one planet, one and a half. They ended on another. But what worked for me is I really liked all the EU nods and other things that we'll get to in the discussion, but it had me smiling, and you know, some of the action scenes were good, but I enjoyed it.
All right, Jen.
Well, this is a big turnaround for me from last episode. Last episode, I was just not enjoying it at all. And this one I actually really liked. I felt like it was much, much better. It didn't keep throwing me out of the episode like last week. And it had some really fun stuff in it, like little things that I found really intriguing, just stuff that I think they stuck in there just for fans, like the Ithorian that had like that weird techno voice system get up. I thought that was really cool, since they're not supposed to be able to speak basic normally, and just little things like that, and the Figrin Dan species, whose name I can't remember, just little things like that I thought were really fun. And I felt like the story moved along much better this time, and I didn't keep getting jarred out of it by some weird little thing. And I'm liking this thing with Anakin, where he's starting to get very suspicious, because I'm still hoping for that towering rage response at the end when he finally figures out that the Jedi Council's been duping him this whole time. So much better episode for me, anyway.
All right. And I really enjoyed this episode. Yes, it's true. Like everyone's commented, we didn't really go anywhere, but what did happen was pretty awesome. I liked the scene in Palpatine's office with him kind of working Anakin a little bit. And I really liked, like Jonathan brought up, the throwouts to OT and the EU that were just dropped here and there. This was a really fun episode, and it looked great. The visuals on this episode were awesome. So I really enjoyed this one, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes on in the next week or two. So let's jump right into it. Our moral is keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer. And we see that Obi-Wan is still living that, and still keeping up his disguise as Reku Hardeen. And we come right into him crashing the ship that they stole at the end of last week's episode into the swamps of Nau Hutta to throw off any pursuit. But obviously, he has other plans in the what he's going to do when they get a new ship. But this brings us back to Nau Hutta, where we haven't been since the Hunt for Zero, I believe.
Why did they crash the ship? I mean, why was it important to crash it? Why couldn't they have just landed in the swamp? I understand they wanted to dispose of the ship, and I understand that, you know, the swamp, you know, would eat it up pretty quickly. But two things that, again, just they didn't pull me out, but that they had me scratching my head a little bit, is like, why is it needing to crash the ship and possibly harm yourself instead of just landing it, letting it sink, and moving on with life? And then they also said, well, we're going to elude pursuit by buying another ship. Okay, why? it would make more sense to steal one than buy one if you're going to try to throw people off your trail.
Well, the buying of the ship, they did kind of explain. Obi-Wan said that if they bought it, then it would be purchased legally and there wouldn't be anybody out looking for a stolen ship, which might put them back on their trails as fugitives.
Except that you could trace the credits.
Well, yes, there is that too, isn't there?
Well, it was really funny because, yes, there was no reason to crash the ship. You know, the swamp would swallow it up. But would it make more sense? I mean, you know, they kept saying that they wanted to buy the ship because they don't want anybody on their trail, but they're bounty hunters. I mean, isn't someone always on their trail? I mean, they're kidnapping people. They're doing jobs for unscrupulous vials and scum in the Star Wars universe. I mean, somebody has to always be looking for them for payback. So for them to break out of the Republic jail, I mean, how is that any different from them living their normal life? You know, somebody's always got to be after them. They always got to worry about the payback, some punk that they roughed up way back.
I mean, isn't there probably a standing Republic bounty on Cad Bane for what he did in the Senate the first season?
I got the assumption that there was some sort of like broadcast or news article or wanted poster or something that would go up and it kind of like be in everybody's forefront of everybody's thoughts, like at the time, like, you know, new wanted person or he's escaped again, like go get him kind of thing. And that's kind of what they were hoping to avoid. Like, I thought it was kind of funny later on, they drew on a joke about his hat, but like with that hat on, he's really obvious. I feel like he was almost more obvious than when he was wearing the prison stuff, but that was actually kind of funny. But it didn't bother me. I feel like they went about it kind of intelligently. They got rid of the prison clothes. They bought a ship legally so that people weren't raising an alarm over, you know, a ginormous, expensive, stolen object. So it didn't bother me this time.
It didn't bother me either, Jen. It was just really funny that, you know, it's kind of a lot of mulligans that you had to give him. I thought it was just funny about them crashing the ship when they could have stashed the ship somewhere just in case they needed it, you know, would it make more sense? Or when Cad Bane says, you know, we have to get out of these clothes, you know, I don't like to stand out. But then they walk right into the town, you know, all three of them wearing their prison outfits. You know, they don't want to stand out, but they didn't really do anything to hide it before they had gotten to that almagum of bounty hunter gear store. So it was kind of funny. And, you know, there's a couple other things that of Cad Bane's attitude that just didn't fit what we know about Cad Bane. That wasn't very into Cad Bane's character. You know, what we know of Cad Bane is he's very calculating. You know, he has a plan. He follows through with the plan. He gets things done. That's why he's very successful, right? Why is he going around acting like Clint Eastwood in this place? You know, he's the one who says that we have to keep it on the down low. I don't like to stand out. But every chance he gets, he is putting himself and his partners at risk. I mean, specifically when they go into the bounty hunter shop or that pawn shop, I think what they say, and he tries to threaten the owner. You know, if he would have just been calm and cool. And I just never thought of Cad Bane of having a chip on his shoulder, but all of a sudden he has this chip on his shoulder where it's going to cause more problems for him to get off the rock. And I think that Morallo Evol is going to have some sort of plan against Cad Bane. He's kind of letting him do these things, you know, but it just was not characteristic of Cad Bane to put himself out there to jeopardize his mission.
But come on, that was awesome. He messed the guy up with a toothpick. That was just badass. Come on.
Awesome. It was awesome, but it just wasn't characteristic of what we know of Cad Bane.
Well, I think the problem there is we always see Cad Bane where he has every minute detail planned out. And in this case, he doesn't have that. Yeah, he talks that we should lay low and we should do this and that. But when it comes down to it, it's still Cad Bane. He can't bring himself to not act like he's in full control of everything and he knows what's going on.
You know, Dan, I think you hit it there. You know, looking at Cad Bane's personality, he is used to being in control. He is used to having everything planned out. And when he doesn't, when he feels or perceives that maybe he isn't as much control as he'd like, he overcompensates. And maybe that's why he's throwing his weight around as if he did have everything under control instead of being more subdued.
So after roughing up Pablo the Rodian in Pablo's pawn shop, our bounty hunters split up with Evol and Bane going to buy weapons and Hardeen or Kenobi being sent to purchase the new ship. Now we see him distract the Bith merchant there as he puts a homing device on, but this is one of our first throwbacks to the EU.
Actually, before even that, in the pawn shop, there was the Indiana Jones hat, which was the first hat that Bane picks up. Did you catch that, Dan?
You know, I'd almost forgotten about the fedora, but yes, I yelled that out loud when I saw that. I'm like, he's going to wear Indiana Jones fedora for the rest of this episode. This is now my favorite episode. But then he put it back down. And then Obi-Wan picks up the concept Boba Fett helmet and then goes to purchase the Houndstooth, or a ship very close there, too.
I caught that, too. I love the ships in the Star Wars universe, so I was like, that one brought a grin to my face when I saw him buy a ship like Bosk's.
Tragically, since the thing got shot down, I guess it's really not Bosk's. There's not going to be some scene where Bosk takes it. Of course, he's still in the pen anyway, so.
Oh, but he may not be in the pen. I did tweet Daniel Logan this week, and I asked him if Boba and Bosk had broken out of the jail during the jail breakout, and he tweeted back. He says, you'll have to watch and see. So I don't believe that Bosk and Boba are still there, so we'll see.
I also honestly sometimes don't think Daniel Logan lives in the same Star Wars universe that the rest of us do. I think he might think Boba Fett's chancellor
now. So, Dan, you were taking us through the shipyard.
Yes, there we were. All right. So, fortunately, Obi-Wan has placed his homing device aboard or on the bottom of this ship, because when the two others, Cad Bane and Morale-Eval, return from purchasing their weapons, Obi-Wan notices he doesn't get one, and he's informed that he's being cut loose, as it were. And he is turned over to the Hutt's henchmen for the earlier event with Pablo, the pawn shop owner.
Does anybody else notice the Ivalo? It keeps vacillating. First, he's like, oh, we're going to keep him with us. Oh, no, let's cut him loose. Oh, no, we're going to want him back.
I get the impression that he just doesn't care that much. Like, he just wants to do whatever will get him out of here as soon as possible. And I get the impression almost that he doesn't care about, like, he'll just kind of use either of them to get what he wants and toss them out as soon as he can get rid of them. And the only reason I think he's keeping Cad Bane around a little bit more is because he's probably a little bit more dangerous.
I was kind of along that same line. I wondered why in the world he was being so wishy-washy about this. And after seeing how he's kind of like, whatever it takes, just get me out of here. Sure, everybody will get paid eventually. It doesn't matter. And then when you see the preview for next week, then it kind of all rings true for me. But we'll get to that. So once the ship takes off and Obi-Wan makes his deal with the Hutts, well, sort of deal, he contacts Yoda and Mace to ask them to lift the manhunt order on the fugitives and to give them some money for a new ship. So apparently the Jedi Council has a little bit of a fund sitting around so they can send people credits for a ship here and there.
I want to see the Nal Hutta Western Union. I want to see how the money got sent to them.
Yeah, you wonder about that, don't you?
You know, like, nobody's going to know. I mean, they would have to kind of send it a roundabout way, because otherwise, you know, somebody's going to go, well, this person just got a boatload of money from the Jedi Temple. That doesn't send up any red flags, does it?
You think that gets earmarked from the old folks home, too? Kind of like the transmission in Attack of the Clones?
Well, you know, it could. I didn't think about that. I guess I always assumed that was just kind of an in-joke, but no, that makes sense.
So, to comply with Obi-Wan's wishes, Mace Windu talks to Chancellor Palpatine about lifting the manhunt order. What he doesn't realize is that Anakin is in the same room as Palpatine when they make this call. And this only manages to kind of fuel his anger a little bit more. And we are really seeing Palpatine lay it on thick to drive the spike between Anakin and the Jedi Council. This whole plan is really obviously proving to work to his advantage for what he has planned for Anakin in the future.
Does anybody think that Palpatine knows that Obi-Wan is there? Or do you think he just sees, you know, sending Anakin to get revenge and be very un-Jedi-like is just another step in his path to the dark side?
I got the impression that he was just capitalizing on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was aware of what was going on, just because he seems to just know everything. I don't know if he has like this great spy network or he has like hidden cameras in the Jedi Temple or something, but I like the idea of him just seeing this opportunity and capitalizing on it, because that's kind of how Palpatine has been throughout the entire kind of series. He's not one of these characters who has everything planned out. He's just really crafty and really good at using opportunities that present themselves.
This part of the episode was my favorite part of the episode, because we're not seeing Palpatine. We're seeing Darth Sidious. You know, we are seeing him lay the seeds to get his apprentice, to get Anakin to trust him. You know, he even says, I trust you. They don't trust you. You know, the Jedi trust me. And I love seeing that. I love seeing Sidious without his hood on, because that's who he is at this point in time when it comes to Anakin. And you can just see, you know, in episode 3, a lot of people had an issue of how could Anakin turn against the Jedi so quickly? How could Anakin do this? How could he kill the younglings? Well, now we're getting to see how he could do that, because the Jedi don't trust him. Palpatine trusts him. Palpatine is sending him. He's basically sending his future Padawan on missions already to go do his bidding. And it's great. It's great. And it just helps me understand on how something like episode 3, how Darth Vader could be created. You know, and I just love seeing these types of interactions between Anakin, and I'm calling him Sidious, and Sidious, you know, these early interactions.
You know, that's one thing that they don't do a whole lot in this series is give us Palpatine as Sidious, is show him when he's pulling the strings. But when they do that, they do it very, very well. That's one thing I do have to give them credit to. I'm hardly ever disappointed when they actually show Palpatine's machinations.
You know, I was thinking about that. And again, I'm going to kind of pose a question to the group. Do you think that the majority of the time when they write these episodes, they're doing it with the assumption that the kids who watch this may not have seen Revenge of the Sith, may not necessarily realize that Palpatine and Sidious are the same person?
No, I have to wonder that too, but then again, they do stuff that shows that they obviously don't think they're showing to a real young crowd who wouldn't have been able to see a PG-13 movie 6 years ago. So, I don't know. They kind of write it back and forth. I mean, it's obvious that even though they're the same person, that they're really different character models, especially with those teeth, but...
You know, that's a good question, Jonathan. I'm going to ask my son, because he watches every one of these episodes with me. And I ask him, you know, how did you like the episode? What did you think? Because ultimately, this is supposed to be for a children's show, not 30-something-year-old men talking about it like it's the Iran-Contra hearings. But, you know, I'll ask him that, because my son does pick up on certain things. He does know, I think, that Palpatine is evil. You know, he watches enough debates with me. He can tell that, you know, that a politician's not... is pretty crafty. But that's a question I'll pose to him next time, and I'll try to have an answer for you next week.
Okay, I'd look forward to that. You know, because with my kids, it's different, because I've started introducing them to the EU, and so they know that Sidious and Palpatine, you know, are the same person just from being exposed to other things. So I sometimes don't always feel like I've got a true sense when I talk to them. So, yeah, I'd be really interested to know what your son thinks.
All right, so Palpatine drops the casual hint that he heard that the fugitives are on Nal Hutta, and Anakin goes running. And once on Nal Hutta, they land just as their quarry is taking off. And then a funny thing, Anakin and Ahsoka walk into a bar, and Anakin force chokes an Ithorian. We get to see some serious darkness out of Anakin, and I loved it.
And Ahsoka didn't bat an eye. She didn't, you know, whereas, like, before you could always see her kind of looking at him like, oh, you know, I'm not so sure that that's, you know, the way a Jedi should be acting. But here she just lets it go. There's no look of disapproval on her face. She doesn't try to stop him. I'm wondering just how much she's starting to agree with the way her master does things.
That, or I'm wondering if maybe it's just par for the course. Maybe she's just seen him do this a lot and we haven't maybe seen it on screen. So she's just like, oh, he's going to choke someone until they give some information. It's usual. No biggie.
We have to remember that Ahsoka is a war Padawan. She's not the old school Padawan. She's a war Padawan. She grew up in the war. So she's seen a lot of death. She's seen a lot of, you know, she beheaded 4 Mandalorians from Death Watch. You know, she's seen a lot worse stuff than somebody kind of getting shook down for some answers. So I think she's just grown up, and I think she's just being hardened. But as far as the force choke goes, I mean, nothing says dark side Darth Vader like a good force choke.
Well, and we've only seen Vader choke, you know, one guy in a single throat. I mean, he was choking an Ithorian, and as we know, they have 4 throats.
Well, she also may be forgiving him, because it's obvious that their bond is extremely strong, because later in the episode when she's defending him, the look on her face is almost like you know, a mother protecting a cub. And I know it wasn't quite like that, but when he's unconscious and she's defending him from Bane, she's got this look in her eyes, this almost feral, ferocious look.
Oh, that was straight out of Avatar right there. That was the Na'vi woman protecting that Marine Avatar guy. That's exactly what I thought.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one who went to Avatar, sadly enough. But we are skipping ahead just a little bit. We find out from Anakin's rather brutal questioning and where it leads that he'll be able to find his quarry on Orandia because the ship they bought only has enough fuel to get them there because the Bith's brother owns that refueling station. So, after some pursuit, they fly in their Jedi shuttle just as the fugitives are getting ready to take off, and they recognize them by, as we've mentioned, Cad Bane's trademark hat, which I thought that was, we actually got a good line out of Ahsoka for once.
Oh, I laughed out loud when she said that. Oh, that was just beautiful.
So, through some rather aggressive flying, we'll say, eventually the fight is taken outside, and this part I thought was pretty cool. This fight between Bane and Anakin on the surface of the ship as it flies. Yes, I know, we're defying many laws of physics here, but still, it was pretty cool looking.
That whole scene, the ships and the smoke that we get after they crash, I feel like it was just rendered incredibly beautifully. You were saying at the beginning, Dan, that this was just a really gorgeous episode in general, and I feel like they have more a feeling of like physics or something to it, because the ships gave a feeling of like weight and heaviness, whereas before they didn't really feel that. I feel like the animators, again, is just like, as we keep saying, they've just been improving so much, and little things like that I notice now where you kind of do a double take and go, that looks really cool. And this whole scene was just really beautifully done and really well choreographed. I feel like it was really fun to watch.
Oh, Jen, I could not agree with you more. You know, I could not quite put my finger on it, but when you just described it as physics and weight, that the ships seem to have weight, that they seem to be kind of in the real world, I mean, you just hit it right then and there. I could totally agree with you. But as far as the rendering of the characters go, they really have upgraded Cad Bane. They had a couple good close-up shots of Cad Bane, especially when Anakin jumps onto the ship and Obi-Wan / Hardeen acts like he's going to go out there and face him. When they have that close-up of Cad Bane, he says, you know, you had your chance to kill a Jedi. It's my turn. Did anybody notice that Cad Bane is not this bluish purple like he was rendered before, that he actually has greenish tones, greenish, yellowish, bluish tones in his skin, that they really, really upgraded his look?
No, he still looked blue to me. You might want to check the tint on your... No, I'm kidding. No, he did look really good, because they did quite a few close-up facial shots of Bane in this episode, and actually in the last one too. I don't know if maybe they're trying to reinforce that it is him, even though he just looks like any other Duros without his hat on. So I don't know if that's what they're going for, if they're going for that Clint Eastwood kind of feel out of him, especially in these episodes, given the close-up on him squinting or chewing on his toothpick, which that's just great. I love that.
I love that too, and I like the fact that they got rid of those tubes that went into his cheeks. He doesn't have that anymore.
You know, I noticed that too, and I was actually glad that they didn't, because when they were in Pablo's shop way back when, they were all picking up armor in a lot of ways. They replicated their looks, especially Bane. He had the wrist gauntlets with the different things. He had the little, you know, boot jetpacks, which you would think would be somewhat specialized, but the fact that he wasn't able just to find another sort of breathing setup, I thought was, you know, at least some understanding that, okay, he can't have everything that he had before.
But he didn't need it. He doesn't need it. I think when they first brought Cad Bane out, they kind of needed something to make him look a little bit different, make him look a little bit cooler. But I'm so glad they got rid of it, because he does not need that thing coming out of his face. I mean, he's bad A just being Cad Bane.
Did they have a purpose? Did we ever hear? I thought, I have no idea where I'm pulling this from, but I thought that those tubes were somehow to like maybe protect him from being force choked or allowed him to work in low air environments. Does anybody remember why they said he had those?
No, I don't think an explanation is ever given on those. I think a lot of people assume that maybe that was something that in some way it was thought at first that those had something to do with the distortion that his voice seems to have. But now we've learned that that's just apparently how they talk, or how Duros talk, or at least how Cad Bane talks. But I don't know if any explanation was given that they were like some kind of breathing tubes or force resistant or something like that. Nothing like the tubes that are on Zam Wessel's outfit that go into her midsection so that she can breathe no matter what shape she takes. So, as Jen mentioned, this fight in the air eventually results in both ships crashing, and that was just awesomely done with the two ships sliding across ground and dust and smoke billowing everywhere, and Bane and Obi-Wan and Anakin coming at each other in the dark, and it ends up with Obi-Wan rendering Anakin unconscious just before he addresses him by name and tells him not to follow him, which kind of, as we find out at the very end, tips off Anakin. But then we get that shot of Ahsoka jumping through the air to protect Anakin from Bane. And since the ship is repaired to a point where it'll at least fly and Eval really just wants to get going, everybody parts ways without anybody having to die. Anakin comes to realizing what has probably happened, and we find that Yoda and Mace have come to the conclusion that it is definitely time to let everybody in on what's going on before somebody kills somebody.
Well, they say that earlier in the episode, but they're like, oh, well, we better tell Anakin before, you know, he kills Obi-Wan. But, well, apparently the line was busy because they never seemed to get through. And did anybody else thinking that when Anakin and Obi-Wan were fighting that Obi-Wan's voice thing was going to get dislodged? I know we had talked about that last week, that everybody was kind of thinking that might be how his cover's blown. I was wondering if that was going to happen tonight.
There were like three times I thought that was going to happen. I thought it was going to happen then. I thought it was going to happen when Bane grabbed him by the throat. And then I thought it was going to happen when he got hit in the Hutt's dungeon. So I really thought one of those times it was going to go out, or something was going to happen in the middle of this fight where it was going to shit off and everybody was going to know. But no, they're still riding on that. I have a feeling that maybe it'll go out in the box.
Did anybody else realize that the second ship that Obi-Wan and Bane and Evalo stole was actually very similar, if not the same one, as Lando Calrissian's post-Jedi ship called the Lady Luck?
Yep, I recognize the Lady Luck immediately.
And I believe Nathan did as well. Yeah,
of course Nathan did.
That's a given. Come on.
Well, let's see what else Nathan P. Butler noticed with this week's Continuity Corner. Continuity Corner.
It's a bit of a random Continuity Corner this time around, as there's no major issues, just a lot of small references here and there. On Nalhutta, the three fugitives are in the Bilbusa Bazaar. There they meet the Rodian Pablo, who seems likely a reference to longtime Star Wars writer Pablo Hidalgo, who happened to also write a Rodian story himself in the form of the A Hunter's Fate Greedo's Tale web strip that adapted a short story from Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina. Given what Greedo's appearance in The Clone Wars did to that short story, that is, booting it out of continuity, perhaps this was a consolation prize of sorts. Rico Hardin's armor includes a helmet that was based on an original concept art piece for Boba Fett, which also found its way into the McQuarrie Signature Series line of action figures. Moralo Eval's armor features a chest plate design that's based on what we see in The Empire Strikes Back for General Veers, the Snowtroopers, and Dengar. Moralo, by the way, is a Findian, like Ossie Sobek from the Citadel arc, but he's also said to be from Concord Dawn, which is a planet that once tied into the backstory of Boba Fett, thanks to Tales from the Bounty Hunters, and which was later retconned to be the homeworld of Jango Fett in the comic Jango Fett Open Seasons. Speaking of gear, Cad Bane, of course, spots a fedora like that of Indiana Jones, and Ahsoka's comment about who else might wear a hat like Cad Bane might be an intentional joke toward Dave Filoni, known for his own hat-wearing tendencies. Posters in the bazaar include two by Polina Hristova, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that show a quartet of Biths playing music live at the cantina, and another touting podracer Sebulba from The Phantom Menace. We also see Cy Snoodles and Gorga the Hutt in brief cameos in the bazaar. Orondia is a new planet created for this episode. The Nictu who interrogates Obi-Wan may be Puko Naga, the Nictu guard from the Clone Wars film. The first ship that the escapees try to use is referred to on StarWars.com as a Junker ship, not to be confused with the actual Junker from recent Paul S. Kemp Star Wars novels, but it's based on the design of Bossk's ship later in the continuity, known as the Hound's Tooth. The ship used by the escaping trio at the end is a Soro Sub Personal Luxury Yacht 3000, and should look familiar to longtime Expanded Universe readers. It's the same type of ship as Lando Calrissian's Lady Luck, though this one was scaled differently to make more sense within the context of the episode. The refueling station on Orondia is said to be based on an idea Dave Filoni had when he was a kid, of where Darth Vader would have to have gone after the end of A New Hope, mixed in with the truck stop scene from Toy Story. For me, I was just wondering if, as in Robot Chicken, we might see Luke pull up to refuel someday, right across from the one-armed Wampa from Hoth. As I said, not much from a continuity-altering or continuity-adding standpoint, so much as just a bunch of interesting little references.
Thank you, Nathan.
That was a great continuity corner by Nathan. He always does a great job. But, Nathan, you did not bring up the Hutt's attack fighters. You know, I don't think we've ever seen the attack fighters for Jabba the Hutt. You know, we always hear how the Jabba the Hutts are this powerful gangster clan, you know, and they kind of have their hands or their... Yeah, they have hands. They kind of have their hands and their tails in different things here with shipping and smuggling and all sorts of things. Who knew that these guys had their own fleet of starfighters? And I guess, was I the only one who kept looking at the starfighters to see exactly who was flying these things? You know, I was kind of hoping, you know, it might be a Hutt. Am I wrong? Is this the first time we've actually seen Hutts who have their own starfighters?
As far as them seeing them actually have, like, a space force, I think this is the first time we've seen that. I don't think anybody actually expects the Hutts to be doing their own dirty work or any of their own work in this case.
Let alone being able to fit into a fighter.
And, you know, if there's going to be anywhere that the Hutts are going to have their own space fighters, it's going to be at home on the Hutta.
And the only other thing I would like to bring up is what great toys that we're going to get. You know, a Hardeen, we're going to get another Cad Bane, hopefully, in his different uniform, these awesome ships, and the creme de la creme, the piece de resistance. If we get a Clone Wars-looking Gamorrean, I would be all over that action figure.
That would be cool, because they have such a distinct look.
Yeah, they do look... this was the first time we saw the rendered Gamorreans, and they look pretty good.
But how well did they fit into the Clone Wars style when they tried to put in, let's say, Ki-Adi-Mundi? You know, he kind of had that big thing in the front of his head that kind of looked a little weird. You know, he kind of didn't transfer very well from quote-unquote reality to the Clone Wars style. But the Gamorreans, they were just like they were rendered in Clone Wars. I mean, they transferred really well in their style and what they should look like. I mean, they were recognizable Gamorreans. And I love the grunting and, you know, they're still kind of dim-witted and stuff like that. So I'm hoping that we will have a Gamorrean Jedi soon.
You know, the thing about the Gamorreans that I don't know why it jumped out to me, but since we're talking about toys, is the weapons they were using looked exactly like the axes that they came with in the vintage line back in the back in 83.
You're right. They did. They were very reminiscent of the big old axes that they used to carry, which I still remember that accessory being pretty darn cool. Well, now would be the time when we go to your voicemails. However, because of extenuating circumstances, this week we recorded a little bit earlier, so we apologize to anyone who didn't quite get in before the voicemail cutoff. We will add your voicemails to next week's show. We did get a preview of The Box, next week's episode, which, despite what Wikipedia said last week, actually does still pertain to this story arc that we've got going on here. Nothing to do with Anakin finding some mysterious box of General Grievous. But the preview that I saw was the StarWars.com preview, which made it look like it's going to be the Hunger Games with 11 bounty hunters. I don't know if... I'm sure that the Cartoon Network preview was the usual conglomeration of all the episodes in this arc.
It was. It was the usual conglomeration.
So it will be interesting to see how this all pans out. Is this going to be where Obi-Wan's voice box fails him? Or is it going to be such a high-stress situation that the facial reconstruction injection wears off, kind of like Martin Short in Innerspace?
Yeah, I'm really anticipating this next episode with all the bounty hunters, because what we know of Embo, he's kind of a good bounty hunter, right? Last time we saw him, he was defending people. You know, he was kind of a really a a big fan favorite. So for him to be actually working for Dooku, working for the Separatists, it's going to be kind of interesting. He may not be the angel bounty hunter that I think he is, you know, or he might not have a big heart. You know, he might be pretty ruthless. We all could see his, we all saw his, the way he fights, and he can handle himself really well. So I was very excited to see Embo coming back, as well as the plethora of bounty hunters that we will see next episode.
One interesting point in it, which I like, and I have to go back now and dig up some comics and see. Did anybody else read the Knights of the Old Republic series that featured the Padawan?
Yeah.
Well, towards the end, the last year or two, part of their motley crew was a couple of pretty much criminally insane, explosive-happy Ithorian brothers.
Oh, yeah, I remember those guys.
There's two Ithorian brothers that are bounty hunters. Well, one's dead, but there are two of them. At one point, there were two of them. I have to see if the name... I don't know how long Ithorians live.
Yeah, that was going to be my question.
probably not thousands of years, but it'd be interesting to see if these guys have, or if this remaining one has any characteristics similar. All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to listen to us discuss Friends and Enemies. I want to thank Jen, Jonathan, and Barrett for joining me in this discussion, and we will see you all back next week as we discuss The Box.
See you next week.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Rockstar. It was a blast. See you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2012. All rights reserved.
But when they do that,